Hello again, and welcome back to the Vox Pop, WAMC's live daily afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Alan Chartok. Another one bites the dust, and it was a big one. Former Assembly Speaker Sheldon Silver, arguably one of the most powerful figures in recent New York State political history. He was convicted yesterday on charges that he used his office to earn $5 million illegally. The Manhattan Democrat's conviction has arguably shaken New York State politics, but the state government does have a long and storied history with political corruption. So is it really that surprising? Not to mention that former Senate Majority Leader Dean Skelos still awaits his fate in court. The question now becomes, what do we do about corruption in state politics? Can we tighten ethics rules or campaign finance law, as some are calling for? Times Union state editor and Capitol Bureau chief and New York Now co-host Casey Seiler is here, and we're going to dig into what's happening here in Albany, and if you want, in Massachusetts and Connecticut and Vermont, because you know what? Character's character, no matter where you are. What do you think the answer to political corruption in New York and beyond? 1-800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551, and you can post comments on our Facebook page, facebook.com/WAMC Radio. You can tweet your questions and comments at WAMC Vox Pop, and you can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. And that's about what I have to tell you. Casey, thanks so much for taking time from this historic day in Albany.
Oh, thanks for having me on. Yeah. It's exciting.
So, Casey,
and depressing, I guess I should say.
It's depressing also. Yeah. You know, we've had Shelley Silver on the air here for the Capitol Connection many, many times. It's always been very funny because he comes on. And we started having him after the governor, after Mario Cuomo, the governor, was on. And he would come on and he would start the show by saying, "Hi, I'm Sheldon Silver." It was really funny. So here is this guy. He had tremendous power.
As Matt Hamilton noted in our story on today's front page of the Times Union, Sheldon Silver held more concentrated political power for a longer period of time than anyone in modern New York State history. Longer than Mario Cuomo, longer than Nelson Rockefeller, arguably longer than Warren Anderson, the former Senate leader. And he did it through a mix of sort of playing to his very large Democratic Assembly conference by being, in many ways, as he always put it, a consensus leader, but also controlling that by controlling kind of the levers of power, by controlling the resources of each individual committee, controlling committee chairmanships, making sure that he had able lieutenants, but never lieutenants who were too able that they might rise up too high.
Promotable.
Yeah, promotable. That's why, for example, good, able lawmakers, Democratic lawmakers, such as Mike Gennaris, who, when he was in the Assembly, frequently clashed with Silver, decided that he stood a better chance of making his way in the Senate, despite the fact that he moved to the Senate and became a member of that chamber's Democratic minority.
We're instead of fighting with Shelley, he was going to fight with the Bronx Traitors.
You're referring to the Independent Democratic Conference.
I am.
The breakaway. Yes, I believe that Gennaris' arrival in the Senate coincided with the creation of that then four-member, now five-member breakaway faction.
Right. Okay. Hey, Casey, if it's okay with you, we have a lot of people on the phone. Should we try it out?
Absolutely.
All right. We'll go to number one, David in New Paltz. David.
Thanks for taking my call. Thanks for doing a good job there. And I'd like to make a comment. What's the difference between Shelley Silver and Joe Bruno?
What's the difference? Go ahead.
Well, that's a very good question. And actually, it's funny you should ask, because we're working on a story that touches upon that today. Joe Bruno, of course, was first indicted at the beginning of 2009. And then almost exactly 6 years ago was found guilty of violating the Honest Services Statute, which basically says that the people who elected you have the right to your honest services, that you should not monetize your office, which Bruno, through his side consulting work, was charged with doing. Now, the U.S. Supreme Court subsequently refined, rewrote, tooled back, as it were, the Honest Services Statute, And Bruno was then retried by federal prosecutors and was acquitted.
By that time, he was how old? 83 or something like that?
I think he was well past his 80th birthday.
Yeah, and it had been a long time.
It had been a very long time. It was a very expensive prosecution. It was a very expensive defense, which the people of New York ended up paying for, because New York state law says that if you are a lawmaker or public official, any public official charged with wrongdoing related to your office, and you are acquitted, the state pays all reasonable legal expenses. So,
and has done that many times. Manfred Orenstein, when he was tried, he got his money back, $7 million.
Yeah, and it makes people very angry. But at the same time, you can see that, imagine it's not Joe Bruno. Imagine it is your upstanding lawmaker who is charged in a potential wrongful prosecution. That person could end up bankrupted by the prosecution, which once again is related to the fact that he or she is an elected official. So, yeah. And Bruno's, the case against Bruno, that while he was acquitted, brought up a lot of the kind of greasier side of the way that things are done in Albany. Many things came out about the way that he was running his private business in very, very close parallel to his to his Senate office as well. And there was definitely some kind of commingling and overlap of resources. It resulted in many of the ethics changes that came about when Governor Cuomo took office at the beginning of 2011. The formation of the Joint Commission on Public Ethics, I think you could pretty much draw a straight line between the Bruno case and the creation of JACOB, and of course the creation of the income disclosure requirements that ended up playing a role in the prosecution of Sheldon Silver.
Sure, sure. JACOB, known by some as Jake Joke, because it was never what everybody thought it could be.
Well, and it's interesting that we're talking now because the governor earlier today named Janet DeFiore, former state Supreme Court justice, current Westchester County District Attorney, and the inaugural chairwoman of the Joint Commission on Public Ethics, right back when it began at the beginning of 2012, she is going to be, if she is approved by the state Senate, the state's chief judge, which essentially means that she will administer the judiciary branch of New York State. And she will be a kind of first among equals on the 7-member Court of Appeals.
Now, before we go away, Casey, Governor Cuomo gave a press conference not that long ago, right? This afternoon, was it?
He did, yeah. Earlier this morning at the Apollo Theater in Harlem, where he was speaking on World AIDS Day.
Did you want to play us a little something?
I did, yeah. He was asked in reference to the to the Silver verdict, exactly whether or not he had any regrets about not allowing the Moreland Commission to run its full 18-month course, of course, with great controversy and clearly at the desire of Sheldon Silver and Dean Skelos, the former Senate Republican leader, who is, of course, now, even as we speak, on facing his own federal trial. And this is how the governor responded.
And before, I just want to warn everybody, the sound may not be that good, and my cracked engineering department will be mad at me, but let's try it.
All right, because I'm playing it from my phone. Hold on.
Right.
The Moreland Commission did do its job. The Moreland Commission was not an investigative prosecutorial commission. That commission was to educate the public, to spur the legislature to pass ethics laws, which they did. And the ethics laws that the legislature passed are the strongest laws in the history of the state of New York.
So, there you go.
Now, well, there would be those who think that's baloney, right?
Yeah, I mean the Moreland Act is not there to create educational initiatives for the public. The Moreland Act allows the governor to name a panel to investigate any aspect of state government where state resources are put to use. So you can investigate a specific industry if that industry in any way receives state resources. And of course, you can investigate broad things. Mario Cuomo set up a Moreland panel to investigate corruption within the political process, which put out a number of reports. A lot of them, as our current governor has noted, ended up on shelves and never got acted upon. Now, the governor said, and that's in what we just heard, that the Moreland Commission was not an investigative prosecutorial body. The Moreland Commission was absolutely an investigative body. It was set up for the purposes of investigating specific cases and the root causes of public corruption. It was not meant to be a prosecutorial body per se, but it was packed with prosecutors, packed with district attorneys. There was, in fact, controversy at the time when the governor named the Moreland Commission, because lots of people said, well, these local district attorneys are, of course, part of the political process. They're elected. They're part of the very system that they're going to look into. And the governor said, oh, I set the Moreland Commission up as a spur to pass laws. At no point in the history, in the nine-month history of the Moreland Commission, did the governor ever say publicly, if you pass the ethics reforms I am asking for, I will mothball the Moreland Commission. The governor, after he mothballed the Moreland Commission, tried to make that case. And he said, oh, I always said that. I always said, if you pass my reforms, you know, but I'll go ahead and do it. That is, it is something that during the life of the Moreland Commission, he never said.
But I have to say, Casey Seiler, that that he also, I think, probably ticked off the federal prosecutor who's bringing all these prosecutions, Preet-Bharara, who was apparently infuriated when Cuomo busted up the Moreland Act Commission.
Yeah, that's kind of the, that's sort of, I don't want to say it's the original sin, but it is kind of the initiating protagonist action, I think, are the theater studies majors out there would say, in the in Preet-Bharara's very vigorous prosecution of so many people, not just Skelos and Silver.
I'm way behind on taking a break, but I did want to tell you first. We had your colleague from the Daily News here, Ken Lovett, today, and he said
who covered the Moreland Commission like nobody else.
He did, and he said specifically that everybody knows that Preet-Bharara has Cuomo in his quote crosshairs. Now, if that is true, and the governor goes and says, oh, well, you know, it was really nothing that I disbanded the Moreland Act Commission, which infuriated Preet-Bharara, that may not have been a smart move.
Well, there's clearly no love lost between Preet-Bharara and Andrew Cuomo. And whether or not there is actually a case that can be made against the governor, I think we're still a long, long way away from being able to assert that. But if the governor faces discomfort over the shuttering of the Moreland Commission, that I think goes to Bharara's larger point that go along, get along government. In other words, settling for incremental change when fundamental reform is what's needed. If that makes Bharara's point, I think that he would say he's satisfied.
Well, I love having you here, Casey, because I have so much to talk to you about, but I must take a short break, and I'll be right back.
Comes from Berkshire Co-op Market, Great Barrington, Massachusetts, a community-owned natural grocery store dedicated to sustainable agriculture, the local economy, and the environment. Berkshire.coop. Clipcentric Albany, a local video services division of Clipcentric, producing video advertisements for businesses throughout the capital region for web, mobile, and TV. Albany.clipcentric.com. Vision Excel Eye Care, Lake Katrine, New York, providing eye exams, eye care, dry eye therapy, and more. Where eyewear is an art, Facebook or visionexceleyecare.com. Nine Pin Cider Works, serving New York hard ciders made from locally sourced apples. Tasting room open Wednesday through Saturday at 929 Broadway, downtown Albany. Be revolutionary, consider the apple, ninepincider.com. New World Catering by Rick Orlando, catering holiday parties in the Hudson Valley and Capital area. Full service or platters to go, newworldcatering.com. And Claire Pearson, Shelburne Falls, Massachusetts, for over 10 years, offering plant, spirit medicine and energy clearing for health, body, mind, and spirit. C-L-A-R-E Pearson at Verizon.net.
Thank you, Zachary. Zachary has brought us back, Casey, and let's take some calls. We'll go to Chuck in Hudson. Chuck, you're on.
Hello.
Hey, Chuck, you're on.
Yeah, how you doing?
I don't know, but wherever you are, it's not close enough to the phone. That I can tell you.
Oh, really?
Yeah, really. So,
can you hear me now?
No. Can you? What kind of device are you on?
Let's see. Okay.
Hello?
Yeah.
I don't know, Chuck, are you on a cell phone or something, or a speakerphone?
Landline, yeah.
Speaker. Okay, put your mouth very close to the mouthpiece there. Go ahead. What do you got?
Okay, I'm glad that he got it.
What?
I'm glad that Sheldon Silver got nailed.
Okay. What else?
And the Capitol must be walking on eggs up there.
Well, nobody's here. Nobody. That's the thing. Nobody's in Albany right now. I'm sure that many, many people all over this great state of ours are walking on eggshells, without a doubt.
But I think Chuck makes an interesting point, which is that when something like this happens, there is always a crowd that says, "There, but for the grace of God goes I," and wonders whether, looks back on their memory and says, "Oh, did I ever do anything that could get me into trouble with this guy?"
Right, and we were talking about this right before we came on air. Are we living through the dark ages of political corruption in New York, or are we living through a golden age of federal prosecution of such cases? And I think it's probably a little bit of both.
Chuck? Go ahead.
Yeah, they got him.
Yeah, well, they got him.
They should have got Bruno, too.
Well, we talked about that earlier.
Money makes the world go round.
Yes, and now we have to look at what happens with the last president up until this one of the New York State Senate and see whether or not Dean Skelos is convicted in his ongoing federal trial. Chuck, thanks for the great call. Appreciate it. Okay, 1-800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551, and to David in Johnstown. David, you're on.
Hi. Listen, this sounds ridiculous, but it seems to me Sheldon Silver is sort of a sacrificial lamb, a poster boy for corruption, because it's perceived that a lot of our legislators are professional lobbyists. You know, if a union gives you money, you're going to vote for their cause. That's what I'm thinking.
So?
That's the statement.
Casey?
Well, yeah. I mean, the ultimate rap against state government, and not just New York state government, but government writ large in America, is that it is for sale to big money interests. Yeah. And that goes for unions as well as corporations. You have to remember that the powers that be that are at the center of the involved prominently in the cases against Silver as well as Dean Skelos, the former Senate leader, is Glenwood Management, which is nobody's idea of a union. It is a huge, multifaceted real estate development firm that is the state's most generous political donor through its creative and vigorous use of something known as the Limited Liability Company Loophole, the LLC loophole, which allows LLCs, these sort of corporate entities, to magnify their political giving far beyond that individual companies or individual human beings would ever be able to do.
Did they support both these people?
Yes.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Well, they supported Silver, and now it's proven by federal prosecutors, through legal fees that were to Skelos, to Silver through a law firm that he worked for and through income that he did not disclose.
But,
now, what Glenwood has said is that when they found out that Silver was getting those fees, they freaked out. They were very upset because, of course, they saw how bad it looks. But in the case against Skelos, it is alleged that that individuals with Glenwood were providing, you know, many of the jobs and much of the income that his son was receiving. Now, it's important to say that nobody at Glenwood has been accused of a crime, nor has Glenwood itself. But Glenwood's senior vice president, Charles DiRigo, and its chief lobbyist in Albany both received from the U.S. Attorney's Office non-prosecution agreements in exchange for their cooperation and testimony.
But what about the governor? Did he take any of that money from Glenwood?
You know, funny you should ask, Alan. Yeah, not only does he take money from Glenwood, he is the recipient of the largest share of Glenwood's donations through just an incredible galaxy of LLCs. And the governor was asked last week if he was going to continue taking money from Glenwood, and what he said at the time was, "Well, let's wait and see what happens at the trial. If anyone is convicted, of course not. But it's unclear if what he meant was if Silver is convicted, or if anybody at Glenwood is accused of a crime and then convicted, which is at this point seems unlikely to happen because of the non-prosecution agreement."
You know, David, you have walked into a very interesting conversation between Casey and I. I think that Preet Bharara, the federal prosecutor, has decided to clean up Albany.
Okay.
And he took the first two of these guys and he brought them up on, you know, good old basically bribery charges. Would you agree with that? You know,
they are both charged. I'm almost positive that I know that Silver was charged with bribery and extortion in addition to wire fraud. And the case against Skelos, I think, also involves bribery and extortion, which is, of course, a legal term of art. It's not like money in a suitcase, but it's equivalent.
So he gets a lot of credit for that. And here's what I was advancing to Casey during the break that I think is happening, which is now Bharara takes a look at the third man in the room, being Andrew Cuomo. And Ken Lovett said earlier today, as I told you, he thought that that Bharara had Cuomo in his crosshair. But I think what he wants to do here is to take on the amount of money that goes into these campaigns. And I think that it is possible that that's where, because I don't think anybody has accused Andrew Cuomo of taking money as a bribe that I know of or raise that issue. However, he takes tremendous amounts of money and people get state contracts back as a result for that. And I think that may be where we see Preet Bharara going next.
Boy, you've been helpful. Thanks a lot.
Okay,
thanks for the call.
Thank you. Bye.
Right. 1-800-348-2551. We'll go to Bob in Albany. All right, Bob, you're on.
Hi, Alan. Hi, Casey. So after we finish, you know, being happy about Silver being taken down for a good reason, it seems like the question is what can happen to improve the overall situation in the government.
Exactly.
And what I've been thinking is maybe it's time for progressive people to take a page out of the conservative playbook, and that there should be a pledge put together by one or more of the better government organizations that is, if not required of candidates to sign, at least they would be pushed to sign, and if they don't, their electorate would know that they refused it.
Yeah,
Casey?
Right. And of course, the big question then is what you put on that pledge. And I think at the top of the list, I think many good government groups would say the creation of an opt-in public campaign finance system that would essentially match small donor contributions once you've met a threshold of the number of donors and the amount of small donors that you have to get before the public match would go in.
Somebody brought up over and over again, and you can guess what the conservative or the Republican side is going to say. You know, unions, it does all sorts of things.
By the way, Bob, we can hardly hear you. I don't know what kind of phone you're on.
Is this better?
Try it again. Go ahead.
Is this better?
Much.
We hope.
Good. My apology. What I was saying is the campaign finance thing is an old horse, and it's been brought out of the barn a lot of times to no success in the Republican Senate. But things like full disclosure of campaign contributions, that you would vote for a full clawback of pension benefits for anybody who's convicted. There's any number of smaller things that aren't as easily argued about, that I think, you know, we're at a point where if a pledge was put together that that wasn't seen as partisan in its efforts.
I think it would be impossible to come up with any kind of pledge that would not be seen as partisan.
I mean, I can tell you right now that we pretty well see the divide. The Democrats in the Assembly generally vote for all kinds of reforms, knowing full well that the Republicans in the Senate aren't going to let it happen.
And the Republicans in the Senate vote for things that, that are viewed as being very helpful to business and development that the Assembly will never go for.
Right. But here's what. Wait, Bob. Here's what. Seems to me that what we're going to be seeing is a back strengthening. In other words, the assumption here is people, it's time for reform. Okay, the Young Turks in the Assembly have to do Young Turk things and turn out the old guard. They're not going to do it. We see, who do they elect? Shelley Silver gets into trouble. Who do they elect? Well, a guy who I don't admire that much, Carl Hastie, who is the Speaker, who immediately gets into trouble because where is he charging his car from, you know, either his campaign account or his public account or the rest of it. He was the boss of the Bronx. So instead of going to the progressive side, they put their backs together, including the so-called good ones, and they elect this guy Hastie. What's that about?
What's Hastie's election about?
Yeah.
Hastie's election was about the fact that he was able to get a majority of the of the Assembly Democrats to back him. I think for a lot of reasons. I think that he was seen as someone who was young. He was seen as someone, and so far it's been borne out, who would be in a very unsilver-like fashion, be responsive to some of the kind of younger Turks who were among the first to turn away from Silver after his arrest late last January. Many of the issues you raised are definitely of concern, but they were certainly things that controversies that were done very much in sort of the pre-Preet era, I guess you could say. In other words, I think Hastie, who you know came on at the beginning of February, so we really this will be his first full session. You know, he has a real opportunity to kind of to come in and be helpful in if there is in fact a new ethical agenda. He can be very helpful.
And
in
I
that
say
role.
To you, and I
it's
say,
gonna, you don't
hold
happen.
Your breath.
Yeah, don't miss meals waiting
this,
for that to happen.
Alan, one last thought.
Okay, very quickly, Bob.
There's a very slim Republican majority in the Senate, and it's going to be one less if Skelos is convicted, and if the Democrats do take it over, then my pledge idea might not be so far-fetched.
I don't think there will be a single solitary Democratic candidate who will not have to, as David Mamet says, put his name on the line that is dotted in support of whatever set of ethical fixes those good government groups end up coming up with. And I think LLC closure of the LLC loophole, stronger requirements for identification of political donors. Right now, if you're an LLC, as Alan and I have discussed in recent weeks, it's so easy to camouflage who exactly is giving money when you're giving through an LLC. You know, perhaps a slightly more robust pilot version of campaign finance reform than certainly was passed when they mothballed the Moreland Commission, and it was a controller only.
Yeah, that was
pilot
pretty,
program.
That was pretty poor.
It was viewed, Bob, really as a joke.
I say to you, Bob, what I said to Casey: don't hold your breath. You know what happened is you got a governor who clearly has benefited from keeping the Republicans in the Senate. That's Alan speaking, not Casey, but it certainly is true. I could prove it to you in a thousand different ways.
I believe it.
What'd you say?
I agree with you, but Hillary's
going to bring a lot of Democrats to the poll.
That's
and
right.
And they're going to be voting more Democratic.
She will, but how do you get the four traitors who came over from the Democratic side to support the Republicans? That's my name for them, by the way. Nobody else's. Who engineered that? Okay, Bob, thank you very much. Appreciate it.
You're welcome. Yeah. Bye-bye.
1-800-348-2551. We'll take a short break. We'll be right back.
support comes from Whitney's Farm Market and Country Gardens Cheshire, featuring a Boar's Head Deli, homemade baked goods, fudge, custom-made gift baskets, and gift cards. Whitney'sFarm.com. Albany Realty Group, a local woman-owned real estate company since 2003, educating and counseling sellers and buyers throughout the real estate transaction. AlbanyRealtyGroup.com. The Albany Pine Bush Preserve, presenting interactive exhibits, 20 miles of outdoor hiking trails, and programs on ecology, natural, and cultural history of the pine bush. AlbanyPineBush.org. Windy Hollow Veterinary Clinic, Montague, Massachusetts. Conventional and integrative veterinary medicine, including acupuncture and chiropractic therapy. Comprehensive pet care and health services since 1998. WindyHollowVet.com. And the Habitat for Humanity Restore, 70 Fuller Road, Albany, offering gently used furniture, appliances, building materials, and more. Donations accepted. HabitatCD.org/restore.
We're back with Casey Seiler, who I have just wounded and insulted. 1-800
from my Kentucky roots.
Yeah, because I asked if his dad played the banjo. You know, if you're from Kentucky, you play the banjo.
My father is a Harvard Business School trained retailer.
What, you think nobody from Harvard ever plays the banjo?
That's a good point. I'm not maligning banjo players.
Well, I hope not.
Okay.
1-800-348-2551. We'll go to Barry in the Village of Florida. Okay, Barry, you're up.
Hey, how you doing? I just wanted to say I was just really disappointed when they took away the Moreland Commission.
Right.
And I was wondering if any of those reporters, did anybody really needle the governor? Like,
yes,
hey,
today. We played that for you already, Barry.
Well, you give me the governor's response, that was it. But did anybody really push up on him and say, no, that's not what the Moreland Commission was about when it was started? That's not what was formed for? Did anybody challenge him, or did anybody just sit there and say, yes, sir, okay, we accept your answer?
Yeah. I myself have written a couple of columns about it.
You'll see it in the paper tomorrow.
Well, maybe not tomorrow, but if you go through the Times Union's clips, definitely no. He has taken a lot. I mean, the great wound in his governorship, I think it's fair to say, is the great rupture, especially with good government groups.
Especially with Preet Bharara, of all people.
Yes, yeah. He that was really, I think, the low point. Right. The everything that happened basically from the mothballing of the Moreland Commission in March of 2014 and through the life of the Moreland Commission, it was a hassle because it was story after story about the meddling. The governor's meddling in the operation of the panel. And then there was, of course, in July of 2014, a large and very comprehensive, very good investigative story in the New York Times on that was basically sort of the full history of the life and early death, the premature burial of the Moreland panel.
But before you go on...
That still wasn't enough pressure to make him reinstated or anything. Is there any chance you can get, like, maybe, to Alan, I'd ask you, is there any chance maybe you can get, like, NPR to sponsor a demonstration to try to force the governor to reinstate the commission?
No, NPR doesn't do that kind of thing. In fact, I don't think NPR has nearly the guts that WAMC does, but we don't do things like that. We don't say, okay, you got to do this. What we do and what Casey does is to explore all of this. And by the way, I want to say to both Barry in Florida, way down south there, no, up here, and Casey, go to the corner of State Street and stand in front of the legislature and ask the first 100 people who pass, what do you know what the Moreland Commission was?
Yeah.
No, it's true, and that's and I think we spoke about this last time that it seems like, especially when so many people are economically challenged, it's jobs and development that people care about the most, and ethics is quite frequently not at the top of anybody's list of important priorities when they go to the ballot box.
But and for the inside crew. You're absolutely right, Barry, and that in fact, the Moreland Act Commission was
depressing, and that it's hard to take, you know. And I just feel like people just bury their heads in the sand because it's such a hard thing to take to see our own government basically corrupt, and we're not doing anything about it ourselves. I feel like we need to do something.
Barry, you're terrific. Thanks for calling. All right, let's go to George in Albany. George in Albany, you're on.
Hi, gentlemen. I got a couple quick things to say. The difference between Bruno and Silver, I think that Bruno was more affable and likable. I don't think anybody's crying over Silver's situation.
You make a point.
That's absolutely true. Uncle Joe.
Uncle Joe was much more affable. Shelley, not so much so. The other thing is, nothing's going to change because it's just like the federal Congress. People keep reelecting the same people that they represent their district, and they say, oh, I like my guy, but I hate those guys. We keep doing that. We're going to keep getting what we're getting, and that's not going to change. There's no Young Turks out there. There's you know, the only way out is death and jail. Now, my third part is, can you guys tally up for all of us scoring at home? How many have been indicted, convicted, and jailed in the current legislature right now? And the last thing, Alan, don't be lazy and call it problems in Albany. Refer to it as the state legislature. I live in Albany. It's not Albany. It's the state legislature.
Right on. I completely agree with that. The New York
Times... I know you live in Albany too, Casey.
Yeah,
I
do.
Know,
I do. I do.
Our kids
proud,
play ball together. Our
proud
kids
resident.
Play ball together.
Oh, awesome. So, proud resident of the Pine Hills. And you're absolutely right. No one's worse than the New York Times editorial page than that. It's like, tell Albany you're sick of the way it operates,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
It's lazy. It's
yeah.
lazy.
Yeah.
It's lazy, lazy
Well,
journalism.
George, because you've been so mean, you're done.
Oh, come on.
No, you're terrific. We have a lot of people behind you, George. Thank you very much.
I got to tell you, also, Alan, that was my email this morning about initiative and referendum.
Oh, yeah. And boy, are you right about that.
That again, remind people that that's a possibility. It's never going to happen.
Well, let me put it this way. If we had initiative and referendum, the first initiative and referendum that would pass in this state, and I mean overwhelmingly, because it does in other places, you know, is the idea that after a couple of terms, the legislators have to retire. Believe me, it would pass, and it would pass overwhelmingly. George, thanks for the call. Yeah, Casey?
To the question that George asked about how the full tally. Yeah. I believe since 2000,
yeah,
it is 33 who have left office, 33 members of the legislature who have left office either due to a felony conviction or under a serious ethical cloud.
Interesting. Okay, we'll go to Susan. Susan, your turn.
Hi.
Hey.
Good afternoon, Dr. Shawtuck.
Well, you can call me Alan. Go ahead.
Oh, okay, Alan. I love your show. I've been listening to it for years. But I really felt the need to chime in on this one. Don't you think, I'm kind of a big picture person myself, don't you think that this is really just another indictment of our legal system? I mean, when you look at the big picture, don't you think, you know, when you talk about money and, I mean, first of all, money, politics, I mean, big money, it's the same thing, isn't it? Don't they drive each other? Isn't it like a vicious type of cycle that goes on? And when you look at somebody like Sheldon Silver, I mean, he was in charge of the New York State of Albany for like 20 years, correct?
You mean of the assembly in the legislature? Because we just got bailed out for you saying Albany. Go ahead.
I'm sorry, but when you think about it, isn't this really an indictment of the legal system? Isn't this what it's all about? Aren't the lawyers, aren't they making the laws in Albany or driving all of these loopholes? And doesn't this even go to the crisis of 2009? I mean, and it's just going to repeat itself until we do something about it.
Casey,
can you comment on that?
Yeah, okay, Casey.
Well, I think.
Thank you.
I think it's an indictment of the way that state politics operates, and I think that's
driven by the legal system. Completely.
What do you mean by the legal system?
The legal system is a reflection of the power system,
yeah.
Susan. And,
okay,
and,
I understand that. But what I'm saying is that we elect these people. They go to Albany, and what do? They make laws, correct?
Right.
Okay, so I'm just going to leave you with that thought. Have a good day.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, as Silver's defense attorneys actually put it, this is the argument was that mean U.S. attorney Preparara is trying to criminalize the way business is done in Albany.
Right.
And actually the phrase was used, this is the system we have chosen, which of course is one that has unfortunate echoes of, you know, the line from Godfather 2, you know, this is the business we have chosen. But and that argument did not convince the jury. The jury, in what I think all fair-minded people would say was something of a victory for common sense and decency, was not willing to sign on to the idea that the behavior that they were hearing about
was okay.
It might be business as usual, but that doesn't mean it's okay.
1-800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. 2551. But let me just check in on that last wonderful call, I guess for Susan, which is this. John R. Arbuckle, I think it was John R. Arbuckle once said in a television commercial, he said, you get what you pay for. So, you know, this system is you get what you pay for. We see, as you mentioned, Casey Glenwood management, you see all the money that was given out and in order to buy what? To advance government? So you give money to every side in order to advance
to
government?
To secure generous tax breaks known as the 421A program.
Sure. And so,
which, by the way, we should mention is 2 weeks away from a deadline that the governor and legislative leaders set at the end of the 2015 legislative session. Labor groups and real estate developers are supposed to come up with a new system that would guide the way that what kind of wages are paid on real estate developments that receive this very generous tax break. They are 2 weeks away from the governor's imposed deadline, or else those generous tax breaks will go bye-bye, will sunset.
Are we holding our breath?
I would not miss meals waiting for the sunsetting of those tax breaks because there's still a lot of money at play and a lot of housing development in New York City, too,
dangerous
which is a big
time
deal.
To do that kind of business. Let's go to...
I'll say. Yeah, you got that right.
Let's go to Daniel in Massachusetts. Daniel, your turn. 1-800-348-2551. Go, Daniel.
Hi, Bill, Alan, I'm sorry. Anyways, my big issue is lobbying. I think until we get an honest lawyer, a group of lawyers in this country that make the laws to implement laws to make it almost illegal for lobbyists to be walking through state government halls and federal government halls, things are going to be back the same. They're never going to change until we have stronger anti-lobbyist laws.
Okay. Hold on a second, Daniel. Casey?
Well, there is lobbying. There is the trade of lobbying.
As guaranteed in the First Amendment of the Constitution.
Yeah, exactly.
By the Supreme Court now.
It's in the Constitution.
Lobbying like anything, there are good lawyers and there are corrupt lawyers. There are good doctors and there are corrupt doctors. There are good lobbyists and there are corrupt lobbyists as well. There are good radio talk show hosts and there are deceitful radio talk show hosts. Journalists, name it. So,
I'm on the idea of if the lobbyists are for profit or for big corporations, they should be stringently controlled.
I agree with you, but you're talking about there's a big difference between stringently controlling and requiring disclosure from lobbyists and outlawing their entire practice.
Not only that, Daniel, but I have to say we once had a lobbying commission which was headed by this guy David Grandow, and he was vigorous, to say the least, in his prosecution
David
of his
Grandow,
job.
Who now does extensive work for
lobbyists.
No, well, yes, for lobbyists, but who also does extensive work for Glenwood Management.
Yeah. So you see, but the point really is the money is king, and these guys are nothing more than transmission belts for power.
I think until we shut that off or control it through. You know, laws and stuff, it's going to be more of the same. That's why the electorate is getting so naive. They don't want to vote anymore. Why bother?
I don't think it's naivete. I think it's laziness, but what can I tell you? Hey, Daniel.
It's cynicism and frustration, I think, too.
Daniel, thank you for calling. Appreciate it.
All right.
Okay. We'll go to Ben in Albany. Ben in Albany, go. You have a very important thing, I think, to say to us. Go ahead.
I was hoping someone would introduce this thought, and I'm wondering if you think that having the legislature full-time and requiring them to recluse themselves from personal business would help to sort of more clearly define the boundaries and get rid of a lot of this gray area.
Well, you know, the governor today in his press conference addressed that. And he said, I think, Casey, if I heard it correctly from your tape, he did say that he was for a full-time legislature, didn't he?
He is for it, but at the same time, as a pragmatist, he recognizes that it's a really big lift. And it's also something that requires a constitutional change which is a, you know, it's a long road to go down, and that would
be Titanic around. Yeah,
yeah, it really. I mean, it's more like pulling the Titanic up from the bottom of the sea and making it seaworthy again.
And Ben, I'm not so sure. We see Dean Skelos on trial for his, you know, career and basically his life, having to defend, trying to get stuff for his kid. Now, what are you going to do? Say nobody's allowed to get anything for their kid? You know, even if you're a full-time legislator or your wife or your nephew or your friend or a campaign contributor, I think all of those are issues.
That's a very good point as well.
Yeah. Hey, Ben, thank you for your call. Okay, very quickly to Will in Bethlehem. Will, you're on.
Hi. I think this discussion is very interesting. Good points by everybody. I'm interested in the appeals process. Do you know what precedents are in place, and what are the chances of an appeal being successful due to the defense's arguing that these jurors should have been released along the way? Does that typically happen?
Well, Silver has said that he will appeal. His lawyers have said that they will begin the appeal process. It's still an open question as to whether or not, you know, he'll stay out of jail while that process is running. It could go on for years and years. I am not in any way, shape, or form an attorney, so I can't speak to whether or not the way that the kind of very un-12 Angry Men way that this jury deliberated over the course of, I think, less than 3 days to get to the verdict, whether or not there are ripe avenues for appeal there or in, you know, frequently in appeals, the challenges made to the judges charged the jury. There are, of course, you know, myriad potential ways. Silver's attorneys are very, very good, and I'm sure they're poring over the court record right now, looking for any hole in the Swiss cheese.
As an attempted social scientist, let me just say, I think what's going to happen here, Will, is that they're going to wait. The longer this thing can be strung out, the better the chances that Sheldon Silver has. Right now, we're in the midst of a very angry group of people about the corruption in Albany. If that cools off, you know, to some degree, judges, although I'll hear from angry judges, follow the election returns, if you know what I mean. So I think that's part of what the strategy will be. Make it go on for a long time. Hey, Will, thank you for the great call. Appreciate it. We are just about out of time. Casey, any last poignant, important things to bring up here?
Hug your kids. Read more often. there's so much going on. I mean, we barely even mentioned, you know, the fact that we will have another chief judge coming in January.
Yeah, a prosecutor and a woman.
Yeah, and actually we haven't even mentioned, I'm now getting all these exhibits in the Skelos trial and just played in court yesterday were all these wiretaps speaking to kind of the prehistory of the fracking ban. So fascinating stuff, some of which you'll see in the paper tomorrow and in the days ahead. So
Casey,
great stuff.
Again, I can't thank you enough, really, for doing this for us. I know how busy a day it is, and we are honored to see you here. I want to thank everybody who called in. And thank you again to Casey Seiler of the Times Union for joining us. Support for the Vox Pop comes from Waterwheel Village, Galway, New York, specializing in extra sharp New York cheddar since 1923, offering imported cheddars, specialty cheeses, nostalgic candies, local baked goods, honey and maple products in every corner of our store, waterwheelvillage.com, the Tang Teaching Museum and Art Gallery, at Skidmore College, providing exhibits, public events, and educational programs for audiences in the Capital District and beyond, skidmore.edu/Tang. The Nature Conservancy, the Nature Conservancy's Adirondack chapter, working to protect ecologically important lands and waters of the Adirondacks for nature and people. Nature.org/Adirondacks. Thanks again for joining us on the Vox Pop. Remember, the conversation continues online at WAMC.org/Vox Pop. Our engineer has been the incomparable Zach Malloy. Your calls were answered by Susie Chekai. She's terrific. Our producer is Jessica Blaustein Marshall, also terrific. I'm Alan Chartock.